Okay, thank you. All right. So I take it, Mr. Hayashi, do you have something to say?
Yes.
Okay.
For the next time, I guess I'm recused again.
Yeah.
So I will see you next time.
And that's because you're an irrigated farmer. You're a farmer that irrigates, and that's why you're recused from this item. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And Dr. Wolf?
Yeah, and I will keep company to my colleague here. I will recuse myself since a portion of my property is irrigated, although the remaining half is dry farmed.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Wolf. All right, Mr. Briggs?
On to item four.
No, on to item four.
Okay, item four is, as our chair just mentioned a minute ago, is actually a continuation of the March 17th item that we had in Watsonville in the northern part of the region. And so we're down here in south central part of our region today for continuation of that hearing concerning conditional waiver waste discharge requirements, discharges from irrigated land. So just a little overview of what we're going to be doing today. This is a panel hearing. As you just heard, two of our members are forced to be recused on this item. And since we don't have a quorum of the board sitting up here, we're handling it as a panel hearing, which is what we were doing last time as well, continuation of that. And what that means is then the panel will then come to a conclusion of the panel that will go forward as a recommendation for action to the next quorum of the board, which we hope is sooner rather than later. So after I get done with my little overview here, we will continue with the public comment. So we had folks who showed up for the hearing last time in Watsonville. And what our chair did is, I'll wait on that explanation, just the overview of what we're doing today. So we'll after the public comment, we'll have a staff conclusion and recommendation, and then it will be time for the board panel to deliberate. So that's the order of events today. I just have two slides now that give a little bit of an overview to kind of get our brains engaged again on what we were talking about last time. So the staff will have pointed out at the last hearing about the severity of water quality problems. We went over that in some detail with summary of the extensive information that's documented in our staff report and attachments. The order addresses those water quality problems. It includes three tiers, and I'll talk about that a little bit more on the next slide, with the highest tier, tier three, having more control requirements. We've had many changes to the order as it has morphed through the last 2.5 years that we've been working on this, and those changes have been in response to the many comments that we've received. Comments in workshops, in meetings, and in writing. Next. So again, these the tiers, this slide is very similar, not exactly the same, as we saw last time. And so you might recall that we started looking at the center column in tier two. And the reason for doing that is because it kind of forms the foundation for the tiers. So everything that's in white here, in the white font, is basically a holdover from the existing 2004 order that the board adopted 7 years ago. So that order requires, it's currently in place and effective, requires water quality standards to be met, signing up. It has the various practices, management measures that are required in the farm plan. Surface water monitoring, just to be clear, because there's potential for confusion here, surface water monitoring refers to the watershed scale monitoring, which is ongoing now. That's what is being conducted on behalf of the industry by the Cooperative Monitoring Program. So that's what we refer to there. There was the education component, time schedules that apply to all of these things, and then an annual compliance report. So that's all part of the existing 2004 order. So now for our proposed new Tier 2, it takes all the existing and it adds very few items. It still has the compliance report, but it's basically simplified and streamlined to be an online entry. And we talked about that fairly extensively at the last meeting. The order requires groundwater sampling and reporting. While the existing order included meeting water quality standards, all standards, including groundwater, the focus was really on surface water, and we've talked about the water quality issues that are more well documented now with groundwater problems, and so this is a necessary component from the staff's point of view to add to this middle tier. And then backflow prevention is also a groundwater prevention or groundwater protection measure and seems to be kind of a no-brainer, and that we've I think it's fair to say we haven't received any negative comments about that whatsoever. So very similar to the existing order. The Tier 1 criteria then is the same as Tier 2 minus this annual compliance form, so it's a little bit simpler. And then Tier 3, we have the Tier 2 requirements plus individual runoff monitoring. So in addition to the surface water monitoring, which is the watershed monitoring, this would be individual runoff monitoring just for those who would end up in Tier 3. The water quality buffer plan, which is also actually a subset for those that have riparian areas in their lands or adjacent to their lands. And then irrigation and nutrient management plan. And one of the things I added to this slide was just parenthetically, it's a more detailed irrigation and nutrient management plan. And you see over here we have nutrient management, we have irrigation management. So just to distinguish it, it has some more detail, for example, the nitrogen balance reporting. So those are the three tiers, just as a reminder to you, that are proposed. So next, public comments. We received, after all the written submittals that were due by the, I think it was January 3rd was our cutoff for written submittals, we received oral comments at the hearing in Watsonville. Now, the board could have closed the hearing, could have completed the hearing, could have deliberated, could have taken action at that meeting. It was noticed to do that. But basically, we got kicked out of the room by the city. So in light of that timeline, our chair asked those who could not make it to the next meeting, it was show of hands, basically, and those who wanted to go ahead and testify in Watsonville, we had them come up to the podium. And then our chair said, okay, so the rest of you who have turned in cards at that meeting will have an opportunity at today's meeting. So we have a fixed number of cards, and we have them on a list here. And so that will just be a continuation of those comments from those who submitted cards at that time. And I'll let you know, it might be helpful for you in terms of anticipating when to come up for the three-minute comments, that they're in alphabetical order, so by your last name. So we will continue with public comments, and one of the things that I wanted to point out to you is that I won't point to it because I'll probably blind Chris over there, but we have the lights up here, the timer, at the podium. And we would really appreciate it if you would use that. I mean, the reason for that is to help you. So the yellow light comes on, I think it might be, we can check on the first person, but I think it's 30 seconds to go or a minute to go. That's basically a warning that you should be getting to your conclusion. And so please, when the beeper goes off and the red light comes on your own volition, finish the sentence, and then that's it. It doesn't mean be creative with the world's longest run-on sentence. Please, if you could do that, rather than just ignoring it and going on until the chair has to interrupt, just if you could please cooperate and do that, that would be a big help. Just one other logistics point. We do have 50-some cards, so that's probably going to take 2.5 hours or so. We'll see how we do vis-a-vis the lunch break. And also, after we do finish all the cards, whenever that is, all the speakers today, then we are going to be asking for a break so that we staff can get together and figure out what our final response to comments will be. And I think that's it for preliminary remarks. Did I miss anything? Okay. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Just to recognize the 5 minute remaining closing.
Oh, right. I meant to mention that, thank you, that the Farm Bureau folks, through pre-arrangement prior to the March 17th meeting, asked that they have a total of 60 minutes. Well, maybe you asked for more, but anyway, what was granted by the chair was 60 minutes, and that they specifically asked prior to that to reserve 5 minutes at the conclusion of all the public comments for them to have a whatever they want to do, whether it's a summary or some response to comments or combination. So the Farm Bureau folks will have an opportunity for that after all the cards. Thanks for that reminder.
Excuse me. One more logistic translation for anyone who's a Spanish speaker is available.
Right. If there are any Spanish-speaking folks who need some assistance, Hector Hernandez is in the back of the room over here and can help with Espanol. And Monica is right here, Monica Bardacarte of our staff. Thank you both for assisting.
But is there anyone that needs assistance?
Yeah, Monica, do you want to ask at the podium if there is anyone who needs Spanish assistance, since I just spoke in English?
Buen día. Si hay alguna persona que necesita traducción al español, que por favor me lo haga saber a mí o a Héctor Hernández, que está al final, ahí al fondo de la habitación. Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
And do we have anybody in the foyer that can respond?
I don't know if there's anyone out there. Hector, would you mind checking out there and making that same announcement if there's anyone out there? Thanks. Of course, they would have just heard that.
I understand, but there's no staff people out there for them to respond to.
Right. We'll see if there's anyone out there. Okay.
Okay, folks, I just wanted to go over kind of where we're at today in terms of the speakers and the decision I made in terms of splitting up the speaker cards and what today represents in my mind and why I did what I did. We had about 75 or so speaker cards. There was going to be no way for us to get through everybody and get out when we needed to get out unless I did something like give everyone a minute or 30 seconds. I didn't want to do that. I just felt it was more fair to give everyone the full 3 minutes, and that's why I asked who could show up today and who really could not show up and who opted to give their comments in Watsonville. So we had about 20 speakers in Watsonville, and that left a balance of about 55 or so speaker cards. Those people are going to get 3 minutes. That's still going to take us the better part of 2.5 hours to get through. I made that decision to try to manage all of the information, all the speakers. I want to allow the board time to deliberate because we can't deliberate on this in private. It can only be done publicly. So it's important that I allow enough time for that to happen. I've had a couple of requests for people to speak today that they could not make it. They submitted cards, but they couldn't make it.
today. And there was a request that we make some allocation or exception to that. What I have done is decided I'm just going to use these speaker cards. If there's an individual speaker speaking on behalf of him or herself, and that person doesn't show up, then I'm not allowing anyone to cede time to someone else for an individual. That person could have submitted written comments to us. That would be fine. I think some people have done that. And we do have comments on the back of some of these cards. So that information is getting into the record. We had a request for an organization. Is it the Vineyard?
Well, there are two of them. There were two of them. There was the Paso Robles Wine Alliance, Wine Companies Alliance, and the Unitarian Church.
And so with those, because those were organizations, what I decided to do was to allow someone else to speak on behalf of that organization or entity. That's just a call I made, and some people may feel that that's not fair. Some people may feel that it is fair. I'm just trying to allow as many people to speak as possible, but to also manage and control the meeting so we can get through it today. So I just wanted you to know that as we go forward. We've also had a request for someone to give their objection to the way we're going to handle the proceeding today, the hearing. And I'll go ahead and allow anyone who wants to give us their objection on what we're going to do today. Why don't we go through those right now?
Can I just one other clarification?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Chair Young mentioned that something about written comments. The written comment period was closed. The exception to that was that people at the hearing in March, some of them knew that they couldn't stay through the end of the meeting. That, you know, it was an all-day session. So they handed in their cards with their notes of what they intended to say. We typed those up. We've distributed those to the board members. And then we've had a couple, maybe one other person who has done that in the meantime and said, I can't make it. And they've submitted those. And I've also distributed those to the board members as well.
Okay. So if anyone wants to put their objections on the record, I'll give those individuals a minute and a half to do so.
Thank you, Chairman Young. My name is Carol Presley. I'm a registered civil engineer, and I reside in Aptos. This comment, again, is not about the conditional waiver. It is about a public process issue. Due to work commitments, I was unable to attend the March 17th meeting and was therefore unable to fill out a card. However, my statement also responds to new material presented at that meeting and therefore is subject to the full implication of the Bagley-Keene Act. The intent of the Bagley-Keene Act is clear. The board is expected to listen to public comment before acting. The Act specifically points to the fact that when new information has been presented, as it was by virtue of testimony brought forward and heard on March 17th, that the public has the right to respond to the new information. As a public agency employee myself, I would think it prudent for this board to limit risk to litigation, particularly over the triviality of not allowing public input. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Shimmick.
My name is Steve Shimmick with Monterey Coastkeeper. I'll be very, very brief, and I don't have anything prepared.
So, when you get up there, can you spell your name for me?
Sure. So my name is Steve Shimmick, S-H-I-M-E-K. And the organization is Monterey Coastkeeper. It came to our attention that groups were organizing people to read other people's letters and statements. And so we actually went out and we told some people that we would like to organize the same thing. So we have statements from people like that cannot make it, from organizations on organizational letterheads, such as Pesticide Watch, that they would like read into the record when their name is called. So we would like to know, as soon as possible, if we will be able to read those letters into the record. There are also In addition to the organizational letters, there are letters from individuals. So I'm just letting you know that there's kind of two classes of letters. Thank you. Steve Schmidt.
As to Pesticide Watch, did they submit written comments? They did by the end of the comment period?
I am not aware, so I don't know.
They did? Okay.
This is from the Education Watch Education Fund. I don't know if that is significantly different, but that's what's the letterhead. I would imagine that it is a program of pesticide.
And does anybody know if they submitted a card in March to speak to that organization?
Yes.
And so there's a person representing the organization that would speak on behalf of the organization?
That would be me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Chairman Young. I'm Andy Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L, with CoLab of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties. Our concern with, you know, the regional board is organized because you have such a big region, you rotate your meetings throughout the community to facilitate public access, which we very much appreciate. But there was almost a moving target this time around where people from this region had to go up to Watsonville, but you ran out of time in Watsonville, so then some people that couldn't make it there that could have made it here aren't speaking. Some of the people that were there that, you know, couldn't speak there because you ran out of time ended up not knowing exactly what date you would be having this hearing. And like I know one particular person, your board originally intended to have it in April, thought, well, I'm going to be here in April, I'll go. But it turns out you pushed it to May, now she can't be here. And so it's kind of almost a moving target. And I know this is not your intention, it's just the way it worked out. I also am very appreciative that we're going to get 3 minutes versus one. But one of the very low-cost ways to address this is to have video teleconferencing for public access. Santa Barbara County's board does it. It costs virtually nothing. And that way, people aren't expected to give up their whole day and travel 100 miles for 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. come on up.
Thank you. I'm Nancy Isaacson with the Salinas Valley Water Coalition. And we did submit IS, as in Sam, A-K-S-O-N.
And hold on one sec. So, folks, we have a reporter here, just like we did in Watsonville, who's sitting over here to my left. So everyone really needs to speak up. And she's asking that everybody spell their names when they come to the podium. So try to remember that. Thank you.
Oh, and one other thing for staff. She has your spellings, but if you just say who you are, because we don't have name tags up here when staff is speaking as well.
Okay.
Thank you. We did submit speaker cards at the March 17th meeting and weren't able to stay. And so we had asked to have our letters submitted. And subsequently, I want to confirm that they'd been distributed to the board. And my understanding is that they were not, because they were not, seems like, in the form of note cards, and they were letters, something that I was told, well, there'd be no way you could read them the entirety into the record. I'd like to object to you not allowing people to submit written comments after your January cutoff date. Staff changes have been made, and I think that it is really you're doing a disservice to this board and a disservice to the public by not allowing us to comment on the changes and the subsequent discussions that have occurred at the board level. So we were not allowed to give you our letters, but we are making a presentation today, a slide presentation, but I do want to voice my objection and think that it is very unfair and against the open public law. Thank you. Public meeting law.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. You know, we have input from staff and members of the public continually through an agenda item. So new information is always coming up that we're considering and listening to. That doesn't just open up, you know, more time for public comment. just because people are submitting information to us. Staff may go ahead and respond to something in an hour or two from now after hearing something from speakers. That doesn't trip another round of everyone having more time to comment on what staff might come up with. It's not going to work that way. We'll never get through with the meeting if it goes on that way. Okay, does anyone else wish to address us and give us their objections to the way we're going to handle this meeting? Okay. As to Mr. Shimmick's request, Mr. Shimmick, as long as you are representing an entity and organization, you can speak on behalf of that entity. That's fine. Okay? All right. Okay. All right. Okay. let's see. These have all been put down in by Mr. Briggs in alphabetical order. So we'll do it that way because it'll make it easy for me. I've got a list in front of me. First speaker is Karen Arojo. Is she here? Second one is Harold Bajini. Third one is a speaker on behalf of the Paso Robles Wine Company Alliance. Okay. Next one is Tim Borrell, Nunes Vegetables. And then Mike Broadhurst, Cambria Farmer. So we don't have Karen here. Looks like we don't have Mr.
Good morning. Mike Broadhurst, B-R-O-A-D-H-U-R-S-T. I own and farm about 20 acres near Cambria. Thank you for listening to me. Staff portrays all farmers as dischargers, perpetrators, offenders, culprits. You choose the word. It's implicit that we are people who lack morals and have polluted your drinking water for our own benefit. Many in the public have apparently bought into this notion and can't understand why farmers don't just come clean and pay for the damage they've caused because they'll just pass on the costs. Really, let me dispel some faulty thinking. First of all food companies don't care where your food comes from, nor do they consider quality. They only consider cost. Food companies buy produce from the lowest cost producer based upon what they can charge you, American consumers, whose number one priority is price, not quality. And second, farmers are in fact generally pretty good people, though crazy enough to do what we do because we love the land. So, who should share the responsibility here? Could it be the people who make the fertilizer, those who ship it, the companies who sell it to the farmers? You're probably thinking that's a stretch. The truth is, the board staff has completely missed the guilty party. Just look next to you. Your neighbor in the next seat, who shops at supermarkets and demands rock-bottom prices. To illustrate my seemingly preposterous allegation, imagine yourself standing in a produce aisle at your local supermarket looking at lettuce. Odds are those pristine plump heads of lettuce come from a grower in the Salinas Valley. The fact is, no matter where you are in the U.S., the majority of your lettuce and spinach, coal crops, etc., come from the Salinas Valley year-round. The general climate allows them to do it on a massive scale, and they do a great job. But monoculture agriculture over the decades has pushed the limit of the land to produce. It now requires hundreds of pounds of fertilizer and pesticides to be applied every year to each acre. Otherwise, long ago exhausted soil would produce little, and a bit of that fertilizer and some of those pesticides end up in your water. So who's really responsible for this mess we find ourselves in? I would argue it's you consumers who don't care how it happens as long as it's cheap. So let me conclude by asking, what is the real cost of your cheap food and who should pay for water quality? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just one second.
Okay. Sure.
Go ahead.
Lisa, you want to give the list to her? And folks, we're going to...
She's got the list.